When we were putting together a little sort of series on thinking about what does it really mean to be the church? What did God originally intend for the church? And a few emails went back and forth between Liz and John and I. And we really felt that actually worship is such at the core of what it means to be the church, that we're a worshiping community, that it's probably worth looking at a couple of times in this whole thing. Because if you take worship out of it, you know, what are we when we gather? What are we? And what will we become as well? I think worship is so integral and core to who we are as the church. Having said that, I apologise if I repeat any of what John said a couple of weeks ago. If I do, it just means great minds think alike, I guess. But I know John referenced this verse a couple of times that we're looking at. But if it's worth hearing once, it's worth hearing twice, eh? I say. So, I really think that we were made to worship. And I think that is within us. I think it's within everyone. You know that scripture that God has set eternity in the hearts of men? And I really believe that worship is something within human nature. You see it on the football terraces. You see it in the business world. People are worshipping. They're making someone or something the object of their devotion, their following, their affection, their time, all those things. And it might not be God, but I think it is within us. And I think that's one of the reasons it's so important for us as the church to be a worshipping community, because we call people to the worship of the God of love and justice and mercy. And we say, let's make Him, the one of eternal value, the object of our affections, and not these temporary things that lead us astray. Because actually worship forms us as well, doesn't it? It really does form us. I know in my life, the things I make the object of my devotion, my affection, they change me. They change my habits, they change my thinking, they change my mind. And I think that's partly what Paul's talking about when he says, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. He's saying, God, make God the object of your devotion, your thinking, your affection, and you will be transformed. And so what are we letting form us and transform us? And I think as a worshipping community, we're making the God of love the one that transforms us. And within the Old Testament, there's story after story of God's people making other gods, other things, the object of their devotion. And they go astray. And they ultimately end up in a terrible place, in bondage, in captivity. And so much of the Old Testament is God calling them back to the worship of God, not because he's needy, but because actually it's so important for us. Worshipping the one true God, the God who loves us and made us, is important for us and who we become and who we are as God's people. We're made in the image of God who created us, and we're formed into that image when we worship him. So that's just my little prelude there, before we just look at some of these verses. But I just wanted to share a little bit again of my story, just as a second prelude into this. And you're getting to know me here at this church, and what might become apparent, hopefully, is that I'm actually quite, worship comes naturally to me. I'm quite an effusive person. If I like something, I really want to tell people about it. My dad used to call me an idealist, which when I was younger, I mistook for the word idol. And so I thought he was saying I make idols of things, which I was most offended at. But he was saying I'm an idealist, and yeah, I love ideals, and I can't stop sharing about them. And it's actually really irritating sometimes to people, or it can be contagious, you decide. So when I became a Christian, worship was something I really related to. Sung worship in particular. I've always liked singing, and with my teenage passions, you know, it was just so easy for me to, like, connect with that and relate to that. And That's why I learnt to play the guitar, just not so I could sing in the worship band or anything like that, just because I wanted to sing these worship songs that I really loved and really helped me express what I felt about God and to God. But I think as I've matured, as I've grown, and as I've done this hundreds and hundreds of times, I've had a longing to worship God in different ways that go beyond songs on a Sunday. And also with that, I've met people for whom actually standing and singing on a Sunday is a real sacrifice. It's really difficult for them. They don't like it. They don't like singing. They don't like the songs. It's actually a really difficult and a struggle for them to do that. And so it's made me think, well, what is worship? It's got to be more than this, even though this is so important to us as a community. But it's got to be more than this. And so that's where we turn to Romans 12, 1 and the verses that follow in. And these have become so important to me, these verses. And I think they're so important to us in what Paul is saying about what it means to be worshippers of God. I'm just going to read verse 1 again, and then I'm going to share a little bit to put it in context of the world Paul's living in, and then how that, I guess, relates to us really, and how what that might mean in our world and in our worldview even. So Paul writes in verse 1, "Therefore I urge you," I'm going to say brothers and sisters here, "brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship." I think that's slightly different to this one. But I always love looking at sort of what was the world Paul was writing to there? What's going on here? And what was worship like in the world of the New Testament in Paul was writing in? Because it's centered around worship. This world that Paul was living in, his whole world centered around worship. So centered around the temple in Jerusalem, centered around sacrifices and offerings, and around these religious festivals and the law. All of this made up what it meant to be worship, and a worshiping community. And these were fundamental to what it meant to be Jewish, to be part of the Jewish community. And when the first Christian communities formed, they were living with this tension. What does all this mean for us? Because so many of them weren't from a Jewish background. But not only that, the Jewish people were experiencing this situation they'd never had before, where they weren't welcome in their synagogues anymore. They weren't welcome in the temple anymore. So their whole sort of experience of God and worship was up in the air. What does it mean to worship God if we don't have the temple, if we don't have these sacrifice and offerings, and maybe if these festivals aren't our festivals anymore? But all this was up in the air. And it got me thinking, imagine that. Imagine that all we knew in terms of how we are as a community, how we worship, was taken away from us. If none of this existed anymore, if we didn't have any of that, when we come together, what does it mean to be a worshiping community? So I think Paul's words here actually answer this question and are so important. And he says this. He says, "Your true act of worship is to offer your body as a living sacrifice, to offer all of you back to God, holy, so set apart for the sake of the world, and pleasing to God." What struck me about this is the contrast between the offerings that the Jewish community would have been used to and what Paul's suggesting here. This isn't about inanimate objects of money, fruit, the things that they used to offer, you know, grain, all these things. Important things, no doubt, to them, but and it's not any longer about the taking of life, offering an animal and offering the life of that animal as an act of fellowship and worship to God. See the contrast now. Your true worship is your living and breathing life, an aliveness about it. Because then it can be for the benefit of the world. It's about life. Worship is now the offering of a life alive, not a life to be taken. And actually, the strength of that, that giving all of yourself back to God is what worship is. Not just a segment of it, not just something you do on a Sunday, not just a bit of money. Everything, that is a hard message to hear for some people. And that was Jesus' message. When Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, basically everything. Love God with everything. That's it. That's a really hard message to hear for lots of different people, especially if you've got something to lose. So if actually worship, you can make a bit of a show of it. You've got the money to give at the temple. You can bring the best offerings and present those. But Jesus is saying, actually, it's not that. It's the rest of your life as well. It's not a tick box exercise anymore. It's not the bit that you can show and make look good. It's in everything. So for people whom it's like profitable or convenient or gave them a sense of importance, that they wouldn't particularly like that message. Because the message isn't anymore, do your sacrifices, do your religious duties, and then do whatever you want. It's not that at all. There's no compartmentalism here. And Paul and Jesus are both saying, worship is all you do. It's not something you do. It's not one thing you do amongst many other things you do in life. It is it's how you live. It's everything you do. And I think for me, this is so amazing because it now becomes, no matter how difficult or mundane a situation is, it's actually loaded with meaning. It's actually really important because it's all worship back to God. Everything. And when we live like that, it transforms us and it forms us. So the practicalities of doing work, sending emails, doing housework, cooking, all those things can be an act of devotion to God. And that's why I think Paul says it a few verses later, and we read to verse 8 in the end. And I'm just going to read from verse 6. And he says, we have different gifts according to the grace given us. If a man's gift is prophesying, let him use it in proportion to his faith. If it is serving, let him serve. If it is teaching, let him teach. If it is encouraging, let him encourage. If it is contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it is leadership, let him govern diligently. If it is mercy, let him do it cheerfully. And that comes straight after these verses about offering your life as a living sacrifice, which is your true and proper worship. So I think Paul's saying to us, everything is meaningful. Everything is spiritual. We have one God and Father who is over all and through all and in all. I'm really emphasizing that, aren't I? But I think that's so important for us to be a part of a worshiping community. We're calling people back to whole life worship. You know, in the church today, we have such a culture in evangelical church and contemporary church of great worship songs and great music and that aspect of worship. And it's really great, and we have CDs and DVDs, and you can go on YouTube and watch these amazing like videos of performances of worship songs and congregation singing them, and that's all really good. But it can lead to this sense of compartmentalism of this is worship, that let's have a time of worship. You know, this is the worship. And I think we need to be a church that acknowledges and calls one another and calls people in our communities to live whole life worship. The kind that Paul says transforms us by the renewing of our minds. And singing is an important part of that. But singing a few songs doesn't transform us. It doesn't, but it is helpful. And we'll come to that in a second. And then Paul says something that I think is actually the most important part of this verse. And this really struck me, because serving God, worshipping God and loving God can be really difficult. And it can be difficult when you start to do it in your own strength, and when you start to do it through your own mindset and your own efforts. And I've had that experience quite a lot. That is definitely an experience in sort of, you know, climbing a ladder to find it's up against the wrong wall. That, for me, that this is really important. So at the start of verse 12, Paul says this: I urge you, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices. In view of God's mercy. I think this is the most important part of this whole scripture. How do we live lives of worship to God? How do we live worshipful lives when we've been hurt, when we've let ourselves down, let God down, let others down? How do we worship God in a situation where we find someone really difficult, or in hundreds of different situations like that? How do we do it? It's easier when you face brand new and everything's exciting and you're passionate and, you know, all those things. But what can call that level of devotion out of us when we're older, when we've experienced disappointments and seen it all before, and church maybe has become a bit of a drag to us, when spiritual practices feel like going through the motions? And I think Paul nails it when he says, see, in view of God's mercy. It's so interesting. He could have just said, therefore, brothers and sisters, offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. But he doesn't. He says this. He says, in view of God's mercy. You know, Paul was this man that understood this, because he'd been a religious zealot. He'd been a persecutor of Christians. We know this story, that Paul was someone that had committed the most terrible crimes in the name of God. And he had a revelation on his journey on the Damascus Road of God's love for him, and that it was actually Jesus he was persecuting. But he experienced God's incredible forgiveness and mercy. And therefore, for Paul, his whole life now is seen not in view of my religious zeal, not in view of trying to ensure that everyone sticks to the law and follows the one true God. He lives his whole life now in view of God's mercy. And that is the starting point for worship. That is the thing that's going to keep our passion burning, that's going to keep our hearts soft, that we do all of this in view of God's mercy. And I know for me, when I've found myself in church going through the motions, or actually when I've been trying to live a Christian life in view of something else, in view of the fact that I think God's a tyrant, I've had that. Or in view of the fact that God will be really angry with me if I don't, or God will be disappointed with me if I don't. And you might have your own there. You might have your own, yeah, I've lived in view of this, in view of feeling insignificant and inferior, whatever it might be. But Paul has so profoundly experienced God's mercy in his life that even though he's the chief of sinners, as he'd call himself, he could say, in view of God's mercy, and say that true worship, the offering of our lives, it always starts there. It doesn't start with our heroic efforts. Yes, I'm going to lay down my life as a living sacrifice for God. No. We can only do that in response to God's mercy in our lives. And I think that really nicely leads into communion. I don't want to sort of steal whatever Liz is going to say, but I think this is so important as part of our worship and being a worshiping community. And It's not just singing songs, it's all of this stuff as well. And what for me, communion, one of the many, many layers of communion, one of the things it means is it's calling us all back to view God's mercy for our lives and for our community. That this levels everything, that sinner and saint and anyone and everyone come to this table and recognize that we are recipients of God's grace and God's mercy in our lives, the shedding of his blood, the laying down of his body for us. So maybe let's just pray as we close, and I'll hand over to Liz to lead us into communion. But I just encourage you as we pray to just maybe think what this morning are you living in view of? What is the lens through which you are seeing life, seeing God, seeing the people around you, people at work? And what would it look like to see all of that in view of God's mercy to us? Lord, thank you for that experience of the Apostle Paul, where you turned his life upside down, not through punishment or chastisement, but through sheer mercy that transformed him. Lord, as we come back today to the table of communion, to remember a God who laid down his life for us, would we be changed? Would we live in view of your mercy this morning? And as we spend some time in worship too, Lord, would we respond to your goodness, to your mercy towards us? Thank you so much for your body and your blood shed for us.